This episode of University Registrar's Talking About Stuff finds me talking stuff with Lucinda Parr, who's Registrar and University Secretary at the University of Bristol. Looking back to the beginning of her career, Lucinda recalls working as a departmental administrator at Goldsmiths to help fund their masters, enjoying it so much she ended up staying. She then moved to a new role, working with the warden at Goldsmiths on developing the institution's new strategic plan. Lucinda stresses the value to her career of her governance involvement in her roles at Goldsmiths and is a passionate advocate for its importance in university life. She did eventually leave Goldsmiths to take up the role of Secretary and Registrar at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, where she encountered a very different culture, real research intensity, and an extremely clear and distinctive mission. She then joined the University of Bristol, another very different kind of institution, which has grown and changed significantly in her time there, and has plenty more developments planned. Lucinda has also recently been through the relatively rare experience of managing the appointment of a new Vice-Chancellor and then supporting their arrival, something she described as being very much on her registrarial bucket list. We also talk about some of the challenges faced by universities, both external and internally generated, and Lucinda observes that institutions often have lots of interesting ideas for innovation, but then struggle to stop doing things. Finally, we discuss the value of the experience of serving on external boards, and Lucinda recalls the challenges of dealing with the student occupation of a governing body meeting. I do hope you enjoy it. Welcome, everyone, to the latest edition of University Registrar's Talking About Stuff. And this time, it's my enormous pleasure to introduce Lucinda Parr, who is University Secretary and Registrar. Apologies. Registrar and University Secretary at the University of Bristol. Apologies for getting your title wrong, Lucinda, in the first instance, but
no
welcome.
Worries. Thank you.
It's great to have you here. Now, we'll come on to Bristol in a bit, but let's talk a bit about how you ended up in Bristol, because you've woven your way through a number of different higher education institutions. So how did you decide to get on a career trajectory which went through university management and ended up being registrar and secretary at Bristol then? What sparked it all off?
So I think I can trace that back to my very first role. I wasn't anticipating finding a career in higher education at all. I took a role as a clerical officer in admissions at Goldsmiths University of London to make money to fund my master's, ostensibly, nothing more, and realised I really liked the environment. I loved problem solving and basically haven't left since. You know, it was just something that really, I thought, I was really surprised by it as a career, really surprised by how interesting it was. And it sort of all went from there.
Well, I never. But you finished your master's nevertheless.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. I worked full time, studied part time, which was horrible. I'll never do that again. That was tough.
So they then kept you on, did they?
Yeah, so Goldsmiths was very much, every time I thought I might want to leave, and I ended up being there about 20 years by the time you've counted my undergraduate, my postgraduate, and then working there. Every time I thought about leaving, a new opportunity came up, and I think that's probably the benefit of a slightly smaller institution. There's more of that ability to sort of, you know, to put your hands to lots of different things, sort of gain that experience.
So you started in a kind of departmental role, and then where did it take you in Goldsmiths after that?
So yeah, so I started in the admissions office, so a central role,
then
moved over, moved over into the Department of Music, and basically seemed to have get the name for myself quite early on as someone that would go into something that was a problem and sort of change it and come out with a solution. So I did that a number of times. I did that in music. I did that then in educational studies. And then sort of arrived back centrally a bit later on in my career as Director of Executive and Governance Services, having spent a bit of time right at the end of my sort of substantive time in education, suddenly helping the Vice-Chancellor, the Warden of Goldsmiths, with the strategic plan. And I can remember sitting in a room with lots of my contemporaries and him sort of saying something on the lines of, "Hello, I'm Pat, I'm new. Who would like to take on an institutional project?" And everyone kind of looks at their hands. And I was the only idiot that put my hand up, and it just was completely random, but a fantastic experience. I knew nothing about doing it whatsoever, but kind of sort of went read lots and sort of worked to get the job done.
Oh, well, that's terrific. And I mean, what a great kind of learning experience and learning opportunity in you know, what was still early days in a administrative career. That's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant because it got me talking across the organisation. It got me thinking about how we could bring our strategy alive. It got me right into sort of all the joy that is KPIs and how you benchmark them and how you measure them in an environment where benchmarking and measuring was early doors. We were just had a planning function. We just stood up a strategic projects office, those kind of things. So it's very early, I think, for Goldsmiths to be doing all of those things.
So we'll come back to your when we get to your university secretary role. But I'm intrigued by your earlier reference in relation to your governance duties, right? Because talking to another colleague from another institution only the other day, who'd started on a governance track relatively early in her career, and one of the things we're exploring is still how few people are genuinely exposed to, you know, the inside workings of governance, and then how important that is to understand how things work, you know, later on in your career. When you reach a kind of university secretary position, actually it's hugely important because of, you know, the duties that you have there and the responsibilities you carry. So did you feel that that was a really kind of valuable stepping stone in your career development?
Yeah, massively. So my boss at the time, Liz Bromley, I can remember her. She had some senior staff movement, and I saw the senior staff movement. I'm a little bit opportunist. So, of course, with my strategic plan knowledge, I bowled into her office and said, oh, how about letting me have a go? You know, can I run governance? You know, and managed to sell that as an idea. Based, I think, a lot on the fact that, of course, most people do have exposure to governance of one sort or another. They just may not recognise it as such. So, of course, within a education studies environment and in music, you know, you're always interacting with university governance at some level. And yeah. I really found I loved it. I don't know what that says about me, but I love the idea of a framework. I love the idea of a framework as an enabler as opposed to something that blocks. So I really just flew with it, and to this day, you know, I think governance is a theme from that job on where I've always kept it, and I feel very at home in the. I sometimes describe myself as the conscience of the organisation, and it's that, and I love it. I think that's really important.
Yeah, no, that's really really interesting because I think that's, you know, it's quite a distinctive perspective, quite unusual, because it's not something that everyone loves in quite that way. But I think it's so important in terms of, you know, particularly when you're in the role that you're currently in, that you've got that passion and commitment for it, because, yeah, it's difficult to find lots of people who share that.
We are a special group.
But also, I mean, and this is my other contention, is that, you know, very few people within universities are actually directly exposed to all the things that you've been exposed to, and, you know, don't necessarily have that insight. Even, you know, kind of new pro vice chancellors, whatever, may have had very little in the way of, you know, meaningful engagement with the most senior governance organization parts of the organization. So, you know, actually having that experience and knowledge is really important to help guide people along the way.
Yeah, it's really important. And I mean, I've always sort of said through my career that the ability, particularly with professional services colleagues, to work both faculty side and centrally is really important, because otherwise they're just two very different perspectives and it's very hard for them to get to see that in the round. And I'd say the same with governance as well. People perceive governance as it all about being all about saying no, blocking, and actually absolutely isn't. It's about making sure decisions are taken with the right information, with the right risk profile, in a way that is going to stand for the test of time and protect the organisation and enable it to deliver on its strategic ambitions. Wow, I sound like a commercial for governance now. I'll stop.
Well, you know, it's certainly welcome. Okay, no, I completely agree with that statement. We're still at Goldsmiths, right? So you've been through a number of jobs. You've been there for quite a while now. So, and you said that, you know, you always something else came up, so you didn't leave. But you did eventually leave, didn't you?
Yes, I did eventually leave. And that was in response. I saw the job of secretary and registrar at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine came up. And I thought, of all things, and bear in mind, I hadn't had an interview outside of Goldsmiths for a good 15 years, it was about 15 years ago. So I wasn't particularly hopeful, but I thought if you don't start to calibrate externally, you never know where you're going to hit. And as luck would have it, I was successful, which was thrilling. Completely different institution though. You couldn't get more different between Goldsmiths and LSHDM.
So how was that culture change then? And I mean, bearing in mind you really stepped up the ladder in terms of your responsibilities, albeit a much smaller institution. But I mean, was it a real culture shock?
Do you know what, the thing that stuck out the most for me was how do you get something over the line? So at Goldsmiths, data wasn't really a driving, it was very sort of how do people react, what's the culture, all of that kind of, you know, sort of your emotional EQ is going bananas when you're trying to get something across the line. At LSHTM, data, figures, you don't put anything on the table unless you've got a statistical analysis that stands up to the kind of standards that they've got. And so it was really interesting. And in some ways, I'm quite evidence driven in my decision making. So I quite liked it. I thought, actually, now I can assess the likelihood of how something is going to land based on what I've got in front of me. And of course, leadership styles. When you start to work with the sort of institutional leaders, had the privilege of working with Pat Loughery while I was at Goldsmiths, and then the privilege of working with Peter Piot at LSHTM. And of course, they are just very, very different styles as well. Just fantastic.
I said small institution, like, you know, it makes it sound like it was three people, but it's much, much bigger than that. It's relatively small in a sector that's got some very, very large institutions, right? But actually, and although it's specialist in the sense that you know, it's quite a narrow scientific area, there's quite a lot of diversity within that range of activities, I assume. But in a sense, I'm guessing about this. So what kind of institution was it in terms of the range of activity there then?
So it was very defined. So it's the place I've worked where they have the clearest mission, and it was understood right the way through, which I don't think many people can say, and that was improving health worldwide. And literally everyone from cleaner up to senior management arrived to do that job. And I've never worked in somewhere where that was quite as apparent. The other thing I'd say for LSHTM was it's so research intensive, and its ability and reach from a research perspective, given its size, was astounding. The kind of people you were working with regularly were top of everything that you could think of. For me, it was really interesting that it has, of course, has quite a buoyant, it's postgraduate only, has a fairly sort of, you know, a very substantial distance learning offer. And then a slightly smaller in-person offer, or it did at the time I was working there. And again, that was just very, very different in terms of thinking about how you deliver things like the student experience, how you, how you start to think about how you move forward some of the agendas there. And I think the other thing for LSHTM was that it was very much forgotten. Whilst, you know, so you know, they did have things like Hefke visits and all of those kind of things, but it was always considered as so different. Was kind of, you know, they were kind of off the radar, and that was both opportunity and challenge, I think, for them. But small institution, and because it was small, and because Peter was a truly global vice chancellor, a truly global director, he was out and about sort of 90% of the time, and Professor Ann Mills was the provost and was sort of running the day-to-day on his behalf. I got a lot of opportunity to go to things like UUK level things, so there was suddenly a lot of sector engagement where I found myself in a room with lots of vice chancellors quite regularly and thinking, ooh, what am I doing here? But again, brilliant experience.
Oh, fantastic. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned Hefke. The kind of regulatory and funding environment can be pretty unfriendly and unhelpful to kind of specialist smaller institutions like that. But it sounds like it kind of all worked out OK.
Oh, definitely. So I think the impact of their research and the importance of what they were doing sort of overwrote quite a lot of it. They were very, I think, again, they punch above their weight in terms of how much research funding they attract. And of course, I had the privilege of working there when we were in the process of merging with MRC Uganda and MRC the Gambia, and that again was just a fantastic experience to sort of go out there and do a full sort of assessment of risk and going through, you know, sitting around a table working out how many samples you had, for example, you know, and sort of traveling to field stations across Gambia and Uganda. Brilliant, wonderful.
Fantastic. But then you decided to trade all that in for a move to the Southwest. So So how long were you at the LS? Sorry, LSHTM. There we go. I'll get there in the end.
No one ever can say that.
Yeah, and then how long were you there before you moved to Bristol then?
In total, about 2.5 years.
Right. Okay. So you packed a lot in then.
Yeah, and to be fair, I'm not sure I was particularly looking at the point at which I applied for Bristol. It was one of those ones where a job comes up. And again, I have to say, to be honest, it was a bit of, again, of testing against external market, thinking, OK, right, I've moved to something that is complicated but small in some definitions of size, certainly in the sector. And I have to say, to be honest, not really thinking I'd get it either, but thinking it would be great. And I can remember sort of as we went further and further through the process, the boss was going, oh, might want to look at housing, might want to think about what this means. I was like, no, it's fine. He never visited Bristol before I accepted. I mean, that's how my assessment of how successful I was going to be in the process was.
But you were successful.
I was.
Yes. And you've been there ever since. So, but again, I mean, the contrast between Goldsmiths, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and Bristol must have been, you know, I mean, you've got the full range there, haven't you, really?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, it's interesting for me to look at what the commonalities are. And there is a set of things that you can, I think you probably pretty much guarantee you need to look at whatever institution that you turn up at. But then, of course, there's the complexity, there's the multidisciplinarity of Bristol, and the size and scale, all of those things. And of course, for me, the thing that's really sung out to me, and I can't believe I'm saying this having come from Goldsmiths, but the attention that's on the university, I wasn't quite anticipating it in the way that it certainly played out since I've been here.
Yeah, because you have had quite a lot of media focus for all sorts of different issues. And they haven't been focusing on you because they want to celebrate your achievements as an institution.
No.
It's been very much about challenge, isn't it? Which, you know, can be incredibly difficult. And I think part of the difficulty is that once you're in the headlights for that, you're spotted for other things, whether you like it or not. So it's a tough gig. But let's focus on the positives. In terms of, Bristol Institution does seem to have, looking at it from outside, over the past decade has really changed remarkably. I mean, it has grown a lot, particularly in terms of student numbers. And, you know, the physical estate has grown as well. And there's big development plans underway. I mean, does it feel like a university that is in kind of constant churn, or does it feel like it's a managed strategic delivery plan? Sorry, it's a bit of a loaded question, isn't it? But of course, these things are always planned. But I mean, it does feel like there's been an awful lot going on.
Yeah, I would say that Bristol seems it to me very planned, and I probably would say that given my role. But it's realizing it's been, it feels like it's only just realizing the full extent of the possibility of its ambition. We've gone through a refresh of our strategy to 2030. Obviously, we've got the Temple Corsa development, which is hugely exciting. And it just feels like we're coming into our stride, is how I can put it. You know, we've got an absolutely amazing group of researchers. Our ref outcome was fabulous. You know, it was just absolutely landed, as you can imagine, brilliantly, particularly after all the trials of the pandemic and all of the pressure that put on everyone. And I really think it needs to continue to plan well, because obviously the external environment gets tricky. I mean, we used to say it was the turbulent times. It's just normal times, isn't it? And they're just really turbulent. But I think, so we will need to continue to do that. But I think it is a planned effort. It's a planned change to get us to, you know, to continue us on our journey.
And you've also, I mean, talking of change, right? I don't know if it's planned or not, probably not. But these things happen, which is a change of vice chancellor. And those, you've been through that quite recently. And without going into it, any of the detail, did anything in your previous roles prepare you for the nature of the recruitment and selection process for a vice chancellor, which is, in my experience at university, kind of uniquely confidential because of, you know, the nervousness around candidates and leakage and all the rest of it. Obviously, in the US, you often get these kind of very public things where everyone knows who's on the shortlist, which is just seems to me to be really weird. But how did you find that as a you know, an interesting challenge?
So I thought it was really interesting. So it was on my bucket list of things to do as a registrar, was to go through that process at some point. And it was just fascinating. And the way in which we did it and the kind of involvement that we did across a wide selection of our staff groups across the institution in terms of defining what is it we wanted from our next vice chancellor, that was fascinating. And the other thing I'd say it did, which is rare, it put me really into my university secretary space. But of course, as a member of the senior executive management, I had no place in that room. But as the university secretary, I was the guardian of the process. So I went through a whole series of interviews, whether it was about the brief or around sort of as you went further into meeting candidates, where Jack, our chair of board, and I would do a double act where I would then talk about the role of the university secretary. And I mean, it's not a well understood role, I would say, within organisations quite a lot of the time. And you could see pennies dropping at the So that's why you're in the room. Really interesting, really. And to sort of see the calibre of individuals at that level, particularly as you get into the final and people in interview and all of those things. Yeah, fascinating. Really, really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, you're always thinking to yourself, you know, can I see myself working with this person? Not that I'm able to influence the result in any way, but, you know, it does privilege you in that regard. You're able to see the boss coming down the track and think, you know, how's that going to work out?
But you, I mean, if you sort of referenced what from my previous experience might have helped there, and the thing that I really did hold on to is the fact that, of course, as a departmental business manager or a faculty operating officer, that kind of changeover of academic relationship. And one of the things that I love about my role is that working with the senior, with an academic partner, in essence. It's a different level and a different order, but it is still the same thing. And knowing that you've got experience of doing that quite a number of times is helpful. You think, well, actually, no, I'm pretty good at adapting what I need to make sure that we get the best.
Well, no, that's a really, really good point, Lucinda, because I mean, you do see people in, you know, our positions who go through a change in vice chancellor and then find themselves leaving not long afterwards. Right.
Yes,
and
indeed.
And, you know, that does happen because, and, you know, if there is a conflict there, then, you know, there's only going to be one loser, right? There's in that kind of new VC established registrar secretary situation. But I do think, I mean, for me, part of the role is adapting to someone else's requirements, right? Because, you know, I mean, on the registrar side of things, you are, you know, their servant, really, and you continue at their pleasure, you know. So, you know, you have to adapt, don't you? It's not for you to tell them how to do their job. You're there to serve, are you not?
So that I completely agree. So I was going to come and say, so I passionately believe about servant leadership, being of service. That's what drives me. I'm there to help the individual, the organisation, to do the job that they need to do. And I've always been like that. And so I couldn't agree more. I don't understand how you would do it any different way. The job is to understand what is going to make the individual the most successful that they can be and make sure that they have all of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really nicely put as well. So we touched a little bit earlier about the kind of turbulence of the environment that we're operating in, and that becoming much more normal. So I'm interested in, and this is either your personal view or a kind of, you know, a Bristol institutional perspective, but in terms of the big challenges the sector faces at the moment, I mean, which of them do you think are the, you know, are there any of them that keep you awake? Are there any of them that, you know, the university is particularly turning over as a real, really, you know, big and kind of existential challenge? Or is it just a different set of problems that are business as usual, as it were? What's your take on the current environment?
Well, I better caveat this by saying it's my personal view,
right?
Because
yeah,
I haven't had it signed off by the university, yeah. So I wouldn't want to commit them to anything that they don't agree with. from my perspective, I think it's a group of things at any one time. So whether it's the pandemic, or is it the cost of living, or is it the war on Ukraine, or is it inflation, all of these things, it's the summation of all of those things, all of those things coming together. And I think with the pandemic, so I led a lot of our operational COVID response through the pandemic. And the thing that I really saw that actually did worry me and is only just starting to go down is the resilience impact that it's had on people. Because people, you know, we all found it really hard. We did things that we never thought we were going to ever be able to do. I mean, like, you know, getting everything online in however many weeks, you know, if you'd asked me, would we do that 4 years ago, I probably would have laughed quite hard and thought, no way, but we did it. But of course, there's a cost to that. And so if it's anything, I think it's just working out how we continue with the agility and responsiveness that we need with future challenges and current challenges as they come down the line in the context of that.
Yeah, no, that's really clearly put. I mean, part of the kind of the challenge though is that layering of things, right? In that, you know, you can kind of think, well, 2, 3, 4 things, but then you get more, and something else is put. You know, it's not necessarily last straw breaking the camel's back, but there is a sense in which there's always something else on top weighing you down, and yes, it might be an external crisis, but actually we're very, very good at making work for ourselves as well, aren't we? You know, lots of our processes are self-generated bureaucratic exercises, which for whatever reason we are loath to eliminate. There's a reluctance, isn't there? And there's a kind of, I guess, there's a kind of security in it or whatever, and a kind of familiarity. But we're really bad at killing things that we can control, aren't we?
Well, it's interesting. If you have conversations with people about how do you address X crisis or Y crisis or challenge, and people will inevitably come up with like 5 or 6 really innovative, really interesting, really thoughtful ideas. And then when you say, and then what can we stop? And then there's this kind of whistling dust bowl of silence. And I'm part of that. It's very, very hard to think and identify. So that for me is why you've got to go through it in a systematic manner. You've got to look at it through the lens of your students and really understand from that kind of lens, or your academic colleagues or whoever it might be, what is it that actually adds value to them, what doesn't, and then start to work out, you know, are there things you can do? And I think the thing that I really think is we're really good at seeing this really sort of big scale, end to end. It really needs to be this big step change, and sometimes it does. But actually, if we can get to a point where we are iterating and continuously tweaking things in a more agile way, I think that to me is where we need to get to answer that kind of bureaucracy and kind of how we process things and how we respond as systems improve, as ways of working improve.
Yeah. Have you got particular programs at Bristol that are concerned with, you know, kind of that kind of tackling, you know, bureaucratic overburden that you've self-generated, as it were? Or is it about culture? Is it about developing people to, you know, to take ownership of these things and solve the problems themselves? How are you approaching it?
So I think it's all of the above. I think you need both in some areas the step change, but also then skilling people so that they are able to take ownership for improving the things that they will know best how to improve. You know, ultimately, it comes down to quite a granular level. We do have programmes. I spun up and sponsor the Student Experience Programme. And one of the pieces of work that has been doing very systematically is the Student Journey Project, which we started off by mapping end-to-end student journey. And that looks lovely on a diagram, but actually is not massively helpful in terms of getting to where is it that you need to do work. So we developed a way of working with our students where it was, what are the pain points? What do they like, and what would be even better if? And then through that gives us a focus for deep dive. And then we go down, and we've done some really obvious things like self-service letters, like global appointments bookings. But they're actually, what's lovely about them is they are impacting the students immediately. They're what they've asked for. But also they save time at the other end. So people who, you know, that have perhaps have spent time emailing back and forth to make an appointment no longer have to do that. They're able to put their effort into something else. So we have, but it's very systematic. We just need to keep chunking through it.
Yeah. And have you got data that, you know, shows that students like that approach that you've taken?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a Your Priorities survey that goes out annually. We also have funded a position in the Students' Union, which is around feedback. And I think the challenge we were trying to get there is not just those that engage in surveys. How do we get to those that don't usually engage with surveys? How do we actually sort of make sure that we've got a diverse group of students? And our Students' Union also then commission research for us. So the ways in which we've engaged with the student voice and down to even how we have the Scrum teams working on particular problems is very different. It's all students are working on it. Students are helped generating it and then checking in on the impact.
Right. Oh, that's really impressive. OK, there was one area I wanted to come back to, which related to, you know, part of your career trajectory, which is that I'm right in thinking, aren't I, that you've been and maybe still are on a number of external boards as a kind of governor of schools and such like. So what's the rationale for that from your point of view? And what has it helped inform in terms of your working life?
Yeah, so it was a really key thing for me to do when I was at Goldsmiths, because I was acutely aware I'd got 20 years of very varied experience, but all in one organisation. So I then very specifically went out to go and find different roles, and I picked up a couple of governor roles within the secondary school system, but I also then joined Rights of Women, which was a charity, and just getting exposure and being part of that, you know, how they navigated the funding challenges, the impact, all of those kind of things, the lobbying was really interesting. I think for me now, I don't see how you can be a governance professional without doing some of that. It's really important that you keep your foot out and understanding what's going on in the governance sector. I'm a member of the Advance Governors Advisors Forum, which has been really helpful. And I sort of picked up as well a position on the One City Board in the City of Bristol. And again, that's been fantastic, because one of the things that really drew me to Bristol was the ability, and you will know this, of course, very well, that in London, the idea of a civic institution is quite hard to define, because you've got lots of institutions and kind of your bit of London is, you know, you kind of have to work that out. In Bristol, it's unequivocal. So that whole civic perspective is something I really love. So I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, fantastic, fantastic. And then one final thing is, you know, you've been around for quite a long time in the nicest possible way, experienced a number of different institutions during your career. And, you know, higher education is a weird and wonderful place in so many respects. So is this something that you'd highlight as particularly strange or unusual or amusing or distracting in what you've seen during your career that others might be interested in?
So I'm going to have to go back to Goldsmiths for that. So Goldsmiths has a very, dynamic sort of student body, shall we say, that are very, very able to make their voices heard. And the thing that really tickled me pink was when I was the Director of Executive and Governance Service, so obviously involved in all the council meetings. And we already hold council meetings in a room that had two exits at the time. So you could, you know, if students came in, you know, if you got occupied, you could help people leave. And I can remember having a very high profile event where that happened, and I looked across the room, the absolute chaos had ensued. The members had all been sort of moved safely out of the way. There was lots of students sort of, you know, making their voice heard. And in the corner, I saw some of my team with arms of what was there. I think it must have been for the reception for the important individual afterwards, carrying boxes of wine and trying to hide them from the students. I just stood there and thought, oh, yes, there we go. This is higher education.
Absolutely. What delightful, delightful. But good on your colleagues for recognising their responsibilities to safeguarding the resources of the institution at the time.
Yeah, they were very on that. And in fact, I can remember that we all reconvened in the upstairs balcony. And I remember thinking, there's going to be only seconds before the students find us here. And of course, what happens in they come? Yeah, this is not a good plan.
Well, those things, I'm sure, carry on at Goldsmiths, even though you're no longer there. But listen, Lucinda, thank you so much for the conversation. It's been absolutely terrific. And thank you for sharing your recollections and experiences and thoughts with us.
Thank you for having me, Paul. It's been lovely.
That's all then from this episode of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. There will be another one along before you know it. And in the meantime, if you can't get enough of this kind of thing, there is an extensive back catalogue of previous conversations with University Registrars talking about lots of different stuff. Until the next time then.